You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Tactics Podcast. My name is Daniel.
It's a kid, double H, half old, trying to live for an existence and stay alive.
We do the podcast sometime during the week. You can follow me at Daniel to look half hope. Where can people find you?
Hopefully, just needs a few little things. A brand spanking new website should be launching very soon. Probably tonight or tomorrow. I've been working on this very hard, but yeah, it's a lot more vibrant, a lot more alive, and hopefully people may like the upgraded. Official Football Hot website, so that should be launching very soon, officially.
Cool. Carl's at The Athletic. You can check him out over there. I don't know what they're doing for international break, but I'm sure he's up to something. Next week, we are going to release our Talking Tactics special called Written in the Stars. It's about Chelsea's 2012 Champions League victory. It's good. That's all I can say. And it's good to me.
And that's so, all that matters.
I know. If you guys like the Zidane one, it's like that, but hopefully a bit better. I've added some special sauce where it can be added. So I'm really looking forward to you guys hearing that and hopefully enjoying it. I don't know if I'll be able to see a lot of the responses because I'll be out of the country for the next few weeks, but hopefully I'll be able to see some stuff. I wanted to start with the Messi Zidane interview, but we could start... There were two big interviews. There was Messi, Zidane, Mikel Osimhen. So maybe we could save those for the back end, and we can start maybe with City 4, Chelsea 4.
Is that right? Actually, no. Let me ask you this. This is best to start this. Maybe it's maybe because it's a larger topic. That game for you, entertaining, great football match. What was that? Because there's been a bit of a debates as to like, was that a really good football match or was that just an entertaining match that wasn't really a good football match, but were just like eventful?
Eventful is a good adjective, I think. I don't know if the quality of football was like excellent though. I don't think you get four goals apiece with great quality football because maybe you have mistakes lead to goals. And if there are mistakes, how can it be quality? There's like a bit of a contradiction there. So 8 goals is a bit much, but when there are 8 goals, that means there's a definite narrative and story that's going or running throughout the match, which then makes it entertaining or compelling. So it was certainly a compelling game to watch. The drama of it, City score first, Chelsea then score 2, Man City respond with, no, how did it go? It was City scored first.
Yeah, per penalty. Then Chelsea scored twice.
Then Chelsea scored twice.
Then Akanji then scored just before halftime.
Akanji, then Haaland
then
scored.
Then City scored just after halftime.
Jackson equalizer 3-3. Rodri scores what appears to be the winner.
And then Palmer. Yeah.
So like even that, even trying to trace the narrative of what happened, there's so many incidents. And those are just the goals. Those aren't the, you know, chances that happened, or maybe someone hit the post or whatever it might have been. Or was it a foul? Was it not a foul? All those types of debates. So Definitely compelling, definitely entertaining. But would I say it's the best football that's been played this season or will be played this season? No.
No.
But will you find more drama than Cole Palmer stepping up to the spot in the 93rd minute or whatever it was?
And then celebrating in front of City fans.
Against his old team and shrugging his shoulders like, yeah. What do you want me to do? Like, you know,
what do you want him to freaking do? Like, that's... Reaction was like... Bro, I think that celebration was, this is what you let go.
Oh, you, wow.
I think that's what it was. See, you could read that many ways, but he was like, you had me, came to the academy, Manchester guy, you let me go, and guess who scores the clutch penalty to make it 4-4? So you let me go, so like, what happens?
I read that one like, it is what it is, or this is what I do. Like, it just, it's not that big of a deal. So, eh.
Hmm.
And I have to be honest, listening to his interviews, he seems like a killer.
Oh, wow.
Not like an actual murderer, but just like the mentality of cold-blooded, nothing really phases me like that. I'm a killer. Like, if you put me in any situation on the pitch, I'm going to execute. Whether or not he has the talent to execute all of the situations he's in is maybe its own question.
No, but see, is that mentality his black side or his white side, though? Let's talk about it. The streets want to know.
That's actually a difficult question to answer. I don't know.
I don't know. No, look, I'm just being stupid. I'm just being stupid. Answer. I'm being stupid.
I there was like a beginning of an analysis in my head, but I'll leave it.
Yeah.
Is he from St. Kitts?
Yeah, I think St. Kitts, yeah.
St. Kitts and Nevis, I believe.
No, because, yeah, he posted like a photo. I think it was his granddad. And this guy's like dark skinned. You know? Mm. No, because again, it's like, it's one of those.
His actual sister looks mixed race.
Yeah,
he looks like a white man.
That's why it's so funny, because it's funny how, like, is it eugenics? Is that the term?
Eugenics is like pseudoscience almost.
Yeah, so no, basically, it's just funny how, like, mother obviously white, his dad obviously half black, half white.
Mm-hmm.
So when you now dilute that, you should still see a bit of something. But then I remember, so in my school, it was the Razak brothers, where their dad was from Iraq, their mother was English white. So the older the younger brother, yeah, looks like half-half. The older brother, completely white. 100% white. Not a speck of, like, Iraqi in him. And his younger brother was, like, oh, light skin, like, you know, you see. So it's just one of those things. Because when you look at Cole Palmer, that's a white man. That is a white man. So it's crazy. But, do you remember this guy, Wentworth Miller, Prison Break?
Yeah.
He's half black, half white.
He's mixed race, yeah.
Yeah, he's mixed race, yeah.
Or is it Jennifer Beals?
That's crazy. All this time, I never knew. I never knew.
Devil, never. Is it Devil in a Blue Dress, that movie?
Mm.
That she makes the movie work in a particular way because she's passing. The movie wouldn't work unless you found an actress like that.
Mm.
But I haven't seen the... What's the new... It's called Passing. I forget the actress that's in it.
Oh, yeah. What's it called? Tessa Ruth. Thompson. Ruth Negga. Yeah. Good, bro. That film is. It's messed up.
I haven't watched
it. Good. It's good,
it.
But it's messed up. It's good, but it's good in that messed up way. So, yeah.
I'm just saying. Oh, do you know Walter White? Have you heard of the story of Walter White? Not the guy from Breaking Bad, but like an old NAACP. I don't know if he was a president or member or
Is this like Rachel Dolezal?
No. He looked like a white man, but he was actually like part African. So he would go undercover for the NAACP as a KKK member.
Oh, wow.
And then bring back information from like KKK rallies to the African masses. And then that would help people navigate whatever was going on. It's like a crazy story. I believe his name was Walter White, but now Walter White means Breaking Bad. I'm just saying, if Cole Palmer wanted to do a service, like, obviously he's too famous, but, you know, he can't go undercover.
Oh, my God.
Now.
I'm literally looking at him right now. Jesus
Christ. He looks like a white man.
That is crazy.
But I feel like that's the story I remember. Like he used to go, he would go undercover, like deep undercover. But he looks like a white man, so it was easy to do. I'm just, if Palmer wanted to use let me not. He was called up to England though, so that maybe tells me a little bit. Crazy game. Yeah, crazy. That's another good adjective for that game. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was eventful, crazy.
See, okay. People conflate goals with a good game, right?
Yeah.
So that's the issue that I would suspect you'd be having.
Yeah, goals does not equal a good football game. It's exciting, not good. Okay, I always use the example. So the best match I've ever seen in my life ever, Germany-Italy, 06 World Cup. It was 0-0 until like the 117th minute.
Is that but the Grosso that was, from...
Yeah, Grosso and then Del Piero. Like, but that was an amazing football match. Amazing. But it was 0-0 for 117 minutes, you know. So that's an amazing football match. Man City-Chelsea, first off, City didn't play well. They did not play well. Now, I would argue that it's because Pochettino has a good record against Pep, and Pochettino is a defensive manager. So he knows how to set up well to stifle the passing lanes for City. So City did not play well. So already off the bat, a team who we know how well they play did not have a good game. They managed to execute and get themselves in the game, but they did not have a good game. They got better, but in that first half, they were not good. That's arguably the worst they've played this entire season. And for Chelsea made a lot of mistakes as well. You know, especially like in losing the ball. So in terms of just quality of football and a flowing game, footballing wise, you can't be like, man, this is really good football. Yeah, these are guys at a high level playing at a high level. No, it wasn't that. No. You know, it was very watchable because so much stuff was happening and you never know what's going to be working. They'll score. Chance here. It was exciting. So.
I'm just reading about Walter White. I'm sorry.
Bro, this, I mean, just looking at him now, that's a white man.
This is of his 32 great great grandparents, only 5 were black and the other 27 were white.
Jesus.
But he and his family identified as Negro and lived among Atlanta's Negro community. Hey. But either way, like that consciousness was relevant because he was able to use it as for, you know, good purposes, I suppose. Like, you know, bringing information back to the hood, I guess. Are there any other points from that game? Oh, this is something I wanted to discuss about that match. And this will lead us to the Osimhen Mikel interview, I think, quite nicely. Chelsea have played decently against so-called Big Six clubs. So they beat Spurs, albeit, you know, with 9 men. They've drawn against Arsenal. They've drawn against City. And there was another result where they got a draw. Liverpool, I believe it was. You could make the case that they should have won the City game. You could make the case they should have won the Arsenal game. I don't recall the Liverpool game that much. But if it was a draw, you know, knife's edge, whatever it is.
Oh, no, so I remember that. No, it was very close. That Liverpool game, like, it was Chelsea could have easily won that game. It was very close. Especially once they got it. I think, did they go 2-1 up? I think they went 2-1 up, I think. But yeah, no, that game, because remember, that was the first game of the season. And I was like, wait a minute. Because Chelsea starts doing something? Wow, man. But then, you know, Brentford happened and everything, so.
Diaz scored, De Sassi, if I remember, from a corner. But either way. So Chelsea seem to be performing decently against so-called big clubs. They have 6 points from when people might have assumed you would get nothing. But when they play, as you say, Brentford or any of the other would-be smaller teams, they struggle. Now, when I look at this, people say, how come Chelsea can't carry their form against Manchester City or Spurs or whomever against smaller teams? And I'm like, well, they're different games. Because Manchester City objectives. Man City have objectives. They don't respect Chelsea as much as a smaller team does. Same for Arsenal, same for Liverpool. It was clear with Tottenham. We have our own objectives. We don't respect you in the same way that a Norwich or, they're not in the league, but you know, whatever smaller club you're Chelsea to them. They're going to respect the talent and the name and the badge, and they're going to sit back, makes things very tight. There's going to be no space between the lines, and you're going to have to break down all 11 players in order to score. City are looking at the game a bit differently. They're like, there's obviously a professional respect, but we're not going to sacrifice the principles of our game because of who you are. We're going to try to impose ourselves and impose our will on the game, which then creates the opportunity or platform for Chelsea's players like Sterling, like Jackson, maybe Mudrick, Palmer, Gallagher, whoever is there. They have the opportunity to, you know, stretch their legs, run, and utilize the space that's being left when the opposition's team has gone forward. That doesn't happen against smaller teams, which then creates the necessity. I think something you've talked about all season. There isn't enough, or this is it combines two things we've said all season, which would be there isn't enough chance creation against the smaller teams who defend and sit back. Added to that, or allied with it, the striker isn't as clinical as one would like to, as one would imagine their striker being. And when you combine those two things together, you don't have a striker who seems to score a goal every game. Neither are you giving him enough chances to do so. When you play against a team that compacts space, it's going to be incredibly more difficult for a team like Chelsea because they don't have the Hazard to dribble past players. They don't have the Fabregas who can see a pass. And there's no magic in the team. The best you have is maybe Sterling. And his thing is more winning penalties, I think. So I think that's the disconnect between big team, small team. But I'm rambling, so you can go.
It's very simple. It's like space without space. Those are two different games. A really good team, the best teams know how to play with space and without space. What we've seen from this Chelsea team is that if you give them space, they can play well and they can actually look good. But that's not how it works in a 38-game season. Because as you said, the inferior team will not give the superior team space. So as a team, to win over 38 games, you must know how to play well with space. One touch, quick thinking, and be able to now execute that space when people are not pressing you high. And at the same time, you have to know how, when guys sitting deep, do you know how to maintain concentration so that you don't have a false sense of superiority, so you're always switched on when the opposing team has the counter? And do you know how to break down that team to be able to move the ball around, find that space, execute the space, or find that pass, that quick pass, that quick dribble, and then say what's up? So what it seems for the Chelsea team is that they don't have the... And now people say, Nkunku, but until Nkunku comes back, Chelsea clearly do not have the personnel to be able to break teams down.
But to
do well in the season, you need to be able to do both.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to ask, is Nkunku a player who can create his own goals? So I remember when I was watching the highlights of Timo Werner a few years back, and because I wasn't watching Leipzig, I'm still not. I wasn't watching them unless they were in the Champions League or something. And they were like, bro, Timo Werner, he's a goal scorer. And then you go look at the goals. And it was like, I think only one of these goals out of maybe 20, 25, did he create himself. The rest of them were either penalties or tap-ins or just one touch finishes. Like, he wasn't dribbling through players and creating the goal for himself. I need to go look at Nkunku's comps the same way and have the same kind of critical eye, but I wonder if you might know off top. Is he a player who creates his own, or is he finishing what's been made for him?
You see, I think this is the key thing here.
Because if he's somebody who's finishing what's made for him, there's no chef at Chelsea to cook, really.
No.
Unless they're looking at Palmer, but...
And that's why people have to chill on this whole Nkunku thing. Think about it. He plays for Leipzig. What is the Bundesliga? It's open. Teams hardly ever stay back. Bundesliga teams, everybody goes toe-to-toe. So you've mostly been playing in a team where you go toe-to-toe. And even when you see Leipzig in the Champions League, they're in very open games. So I haven't seen Nkunku play in a team where teams sit back. So I don't know how, because I'm sure Nkunku with space, oh bro, that guy is amazing in space because of his speed, his finishing ability, his ability to also carry the ball as well. But I'm just not sure how well he is, because how many teams do Leipzig play that will sit back? Leipzig and Bayern. So when they face Mainz or they face Hoffenheim, bro, Hoffenheim will go toe-to-toe against them. So again, even when Leipzig play in the Champions League, they're not a team that really sets it back. They take the game to you. So if Nkunku comes back, does it solve Chelsea's issues? I don't think so. Chelsea need a creator. They need a playmaker. They need a guy who can unlock defenses, which is what a Bernardo Silva does, which is what a Salah can do, which is what an Odegaard or a Saka can do. You know, like Saka can make space for a shot and shoot. Odegaard can make that key pass. You know what Trossard can do? Silva, you know how creative he is and how much of a playmaker that he can be. So these are all Doku, you know how good he is 1v1. Chelsea just don't have these players to break guys down. Other teams do, which is the issues that Chelsea are going to lie into. So that's the thing, bro. Nkunku is Lord Savior, man. So
I don't know. He needs his own Bible book at this point. We'll come back to Chelsea, but since you mentioned Arsenal, I do want to bring this up. So Aaron Ramsdale's dad came out, Lord. I feel, within the past few days, and said something to the effect of, like, Aaron isn't happy when he's not playing. We want to get the smile back on his face, da-da-da-da-da. Have you been monitoring the Ramsdale-Raya situation, which seems to be, I mean, we haven't discussed it on here, but whenever I watch Raya, I don't understand what Arteta sees in him that would make him a more valuable keeper than Ramsdale. Especially, like, I remember, like, the Arsenal game, the Arsenal-Chelsea game, he was not good. Like, the Mudryk chance that went in, Mudryk cross that went in, let's be real. He passed the ball to Cole Palmer.
Mudryk chipped him. I don't care when it says Mudryk chipped him. I'm sticking to that story.
He chipped him, but like he was chipping across. He wasn't chipping for a goal. Like he doesn't seem convincing. That I think, was it Brentford? There was one of those games where he just like let in a goal. Like he's not a convincing keeper. So it's not as if they've bought Courtois or like maybe Oblak from a few years ago or Ter Stegen from last season. Like it's David Raya. Like who, we don't even know who this guy is. Really? Like maybe if you're
I can give you a simple answer. People are obsessed with trying to mimic Pep. Arteta worked with Pep. Hey, I want my own ball playing keeper as well. It is the dumbest thing I can think of. It is so stupid. And I'll fight every Arsenal fan with it. Did Ramsdale make mistakes? Yes. Sure he did. Did he make more mistakes than amazing saves? No. I can't think of, first of all, Daniel, I don't know who the hell Raya is, bro. I don't know where the hell they got this guy from. That's the first thing. Second thing is that I've not seen anything from Raya that said, yeah, man, you know what? This is definitely an upgrade. Nothing. For Ramsdale, I'm like, yeah, he made a few mistakes. This guy has made some of the most stunning saves I've seen in the Premier League in a long time. Like where I'm like, how did he save that? And let's just be simple. The goalkeeper is there to be a goalkeeper. This speaks to a much larger thing, which is that I want specialists, not jacks of all trades. Specialize in your skill and, you know, be pretty good in other things. Courtois ain't great with his feet, but he's good enough. But he's a specialist in being a keeper and a shot stopper. So what I want from a keeper is you specialize. Every time in training, you specialize in handling, commanding your box, reflexes, communication with the defenders. That is what I want you to be a master at. Playing with your feet, okay, improve on everything, but that's your prime directive. The issue here is that people are trying to reinvent the wheel. Oh, like we want him to be like this extra outfield player to add something. And this is what I always say, please show me the data of how many times a team has scored a goal from a keeper playing it out from the back. Show me the data. I can bet you that the data isn't very high of where teams have scored a goal from the keeper. Here's my thing. When that ball goes long, you're going to get it back. You're going to eventually get it back. So the argument of, I don't get the argument apart from an aesthetic thing of, I want to play out from the back. It doesn't make sense. Because if data showed that, oh, you score a high number of goals when you play from the back from the keeper, I'm like, cool. But bro, I don't even need the data thing. I watch the games. A guy will play from the back. Defenders will be like, ugh! And they'll lose the ball. I'm like, okay, now what? So,
do you know what's funny to me is that, okay, now this isn't every team. So maybe City and teams like that, they stick to their principles because that's how they're coached. But these teams that want to play it short, we're playing good football, play from the back, goalkeeper playing to the center backs, you know, 1-2 touch, whatever it is. If they're down 1-0 with 90 minutes, they're not playing that little tiki-taka short pass.
No.
If they get a free kick, 10 people are going into the box, however far the line is, the defensive line, and the keeper comes and he punts the ball as far as he can because they're trying to score. Which tells me, if in your mind, in crunch time, in injury time, or added time, whatever it is, you're going for a goal, and the best way you feel like we're going to score quick is by punting the ball long into a group of bodies and hopefully something happens. That tells me maybe you don't believe the hype with the short playing as much as you might claim you do. Mm. Now, I would have to observe Arsenal to see if they're in a losing position. What do they do when it's, you know, 94 minutes and this is their last possession? Are they telling Raya to punt the ball long, or are they telling him to play it short? My suspicion, no evidence, would be that they're punting that ball as far as he can kick it and hopefully something happens, like amongst the heads, so to speak. So that to me has always been a signifier of, like, do you really believe this? Do you really believe the best way to score is that? Because if you did, you would do it throughout all 90 minutes. Yeah. You wouldn't wait till the end of the game and then just start playing Route 1 like it's Sam Allardyce at Bolton or whatever. That's all I'm saying.
And it's stupid. It's stupid. It's stupid.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Doubling back, I did watch them. I've started watching the Mikel series.
Now, yeah, Obi-Wan podcast, I will say
he's not really the star of the podcast for me. It's his co-host. Like, his co-host is the Scottish dude. He's a great interviewer.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So, but Mikel has the pulling power. So you can get Terry, yeah. You can get Lampard, you can get the latest was Victor Osimhen. Mikel tried. He's like, bro, we need you. Please come. He's like, did you watch Drogba?
Oh, yeah.
And then Osimhen went into this whole thing of how he was watching YouTube 20 years ago, which didn't exist. And
how hold on. I don't know how I feel. Shouldn't Drogba have been the third guest?
Maybe.
I don't know. Because, bro, he has that number, bro. That link is strong. Shouldn't that be the third? Personally, for me, that should be the first guest, but I get it.
We don't know what Drogba's doing. He could be, he's probably saving the world somewhere. We don't know what he's up to. This is what we know. We know we can find him when the Ballon d'Or ceremony is happening, because apparently he's been tagged for that. But what else? I don't know what else he's up to. So maybe he doesn't have time to talk with Mikel. Maybe, have you ever seen Drogba on a podcast? I don't know if
That's why, because here's my thing. When he launched it, Obi Mikel, Drogba was one of the guys who actually said congratulations. Hey, and he said congratulations, and you know, maybe I'll come up and do something. He alluded to I was like, come on, bro, come on. So yes, he's gonna do it. He's gonna, like, basically, it is going to happen. I'm like saying, why wasn't he the third one? Because bro, that's the train trinity, the racist adulterer, Lamps and Didier. So.
The Terry one was actually interesting, man. Like, it was actually pretty good. I suspected he called him Obes, but then when he actually did it, I was like, ugh. He doesn't call him Obi or Obi Mikel or John. It's like Obes. I was like, oh.
Obes. Oh wow.
Anyway, but so really, he should go after all of the major Chelsea players of that generation.
That's what
so
I thought.
I want a Maluda interview. I want an Anelka interview. I want Cech.
Oh
I
wow,
want
Anelka.
Cole,
yeah.
Essien.
Basically, you've got to basically Drogba and Essien.
Balak would
on.
Be really good. Balak would yeah. be very interesting. Yeah. Especially from a midfield competitor at that time. That would have been.
And also, obviously, the 09 game as well. So. Mm. Do you think he can get Mourinho?
To be on there.
He has to be there, bro. That would be so good. That would be so. Because, like, those stories, like, you know, when, like, he said, like. Yeah, because you know how he said, like, Lampard was like his son.
And like Essien was another. Essien calls Mourinho like daddy, which is very strange. So
that's
another one.
But see now, the one thing that I would love that I know would never happen because he never does interviews is Abramovich. And did you hear the story of like when you know when his dad was kidnapped, and Abramovich said, "You know, I can get guys."
I saw the clip, but I didn't click it.
Yeah, because he said like Abramovich was like. You know that, hey, if anything you need, you know that I can get people to get a dad out. And Omika was, I don't know, I say, Rafferty, no, trust me, you don't need to worry about anything. If, give me, say it, and I can send guys to get your guy out. You know, so.
Yeah, I don't doubt him. I don't doubt.
Of course not.
Yes, of course.
I'm just saying, you know guys in Nigeria? That's amazing, so.
But I think Victor's a good third episode because it makes sense. So what did you make of Victor, or I guess maybe not of the interview itself, but just this idea that maybe he could leave Napoli based on what's going on there? They sacked Rudy Garcia,
Walter Mazzarri.
Mazzarri, the dude who was there back in the day,
yeah, Lavezzi Cavani era, yeah.
No,
he has to go. Like,
so maybe it's time for him to leave, but the question is where.
Like, look, I will be shocked if Osimhen doesn't leave next summer. Like, I think he's gone. It's just about who's ready to pay De Laurentiis the 160 that he'll demand for him. My thing is speaking to Real Madrid fans, I think they're all in for Endrick to be their guy for next summer.
We'll get there.
This is the thing that can be excited for Chelsea fans. So, first thing, the Premier League is the most important league in Nigeria, hands down. So, if you're Nigerian, you want to go to the Premier League. So, most Nigerians, if you would ask them, their preference is to play for a Premier League over any other league in the world. Third thing, most Nigerians would prefer to be in London than anywhere else. So if you use all of that, it whittles things down to Chelsea because Arsenal have Jesus and Eddie Murphy. Manchester, that's in Manchester, they've got Rasmus Højlund. City, that's in Manchester, they've got Haaland and Alvarez. Liverpool, that's in Liverpool, they have Darwin Nunes. And also, there are not that many Tottenham fans. There are not that many Nigerian Tottenham fans, so it's just leaves Chelsea. So Chelsea have a really, really good chance of signing him if they have the money. So,
We know they have the money. It's just a matter of do they have the willingness. I don't think it's as clear cut though as Chelsea, because I do think Manchester United are still in. Number one, I think.
Well, what about Rasmus?
He hasn't scored in the Premier League. I mean, I know he has 5 goals in the Champions League, but you know. Copenhagen and Galatasaray or whatever. Like, I don't know if those really count for what people think they do. I think, like, when they were talking about Manchester, when Mikel was talking about, because his co-host is a United fan, I feel like Victor likes United more than he likes Chelsea. I'm just saying. Like he and this is a conflation that people had with Lukaku as well. People thought Lukaku was a Chelsea fan. No, Lukaku was a Drogba fan, and those are two different things. It's the idea It's like I'm a Vince Carter fan. I'm not necessarily a fan of the Toronto Raptors or the New Jersey Nets at the time or the Orlando Magic. I just follow my guy because he's my guy. Mm-hmm. So if Drogba went to Arsenal, if he went to City, if he went to United, if he went to whoever was there at the time, people would have just, especially strikers, they wouldn't care if he was playing for Chelsea. They would have just gone with him to wherever he went. So Osimhen might be a fan of Drogba and his game, his mentality, his style of play, whatever. That doesn't necessarily mean he's a fan of Chelsea. Now other people take on the club. So that happened to me with you and Zola. It happened to you where, like, I like Zola. I like Chelsea. Like, that connection happens. But especially for a player, I think it's probably easier to divorce who they play for with and them. So maybe Victor is a Drogba fan rather than a Chelsea fan, which I think is what Lukaku had. Nonetheless, I think United are there. I think Chelsea are there secondarily. I think, as you say, Madrid are there. But it's a question of, number one, what happens with Mbappe? Because if Mbappe comes, I feel like they're going to put him up top, and then you'll have...
Yeah, which is stupid.
Yeah, I mean, he won't like it, but that's what will happen. And he'll just kind of... he's the Cristiano regen, where he's just going to be stuck at number nine, scored a bunch of goals. And again, if United get the new ownership, maybe they would want to make a splash. And that might entail we need a number nine because Hoyland hasn't scored enough goals in the league or whatever the case may be. And we go for the best striker that's available, which is Osimhen. So unless, who knows, maybe Mikel has some magic or I don't know what. But
Agent Mikel.
Okay, you might not be a Chelsea fan, but if Drogba calls and says who you are a fan of and says, Victor, I need you at Stamford Bridge. Maybe that could work. Maybe it could work.
Uncle Didier.
So next interview, though, I think worth talking about is Messi and Zidane for Adidas. So you weren't here last week, so we didn't get to talk about this. I don't even think I talked about it with Carl. What did you take away from kind of, because it's a discussion we've had on here for a while about the death of the number 10 and positions and all of that. Like, they really got into it on a level that I wasn't really expecting. But what did you take away from that?
No, I mean, I think it's everything that we've been saying. Like, football has just changed, you know. Again, you can look at that. And I think it sort of rhymed with... or really was connected to even the City-Chelsea game. Because when I was looking at City, I was thinking of the interview. As I went to look at City, like, it's like a hive mind. Again, I'll play this game with you. How many players in the Premier League do you look forward to seeing? Like, how many players are you like, oh man, like, I can't wait to see Henry. Oh man, I can't wait to see, like, Hazard. Oh, I can't wait to see Rooney. Oh, I can't wait to see Van. So how many of these players they're hardly any. Because nobody's given the freedom or the responsibility to be that Ronaldinho. And what I've always said is that most people, actually, no, I don't know whether that's right. I don't know what the math is, but a good number of people fall in love with football because of a player. So I think there are, and I keep saying this, there are two types of fans, football fans and tribal fans. That's tribal fan, they fall in love with football because of the team. Their first memory, I was 2 years old. My dad took me to a Barca game, a Chelsea game, a Liverpool game, a Bayern game. And I've been with that team ever since because that team reminds me of the bond I have with my dad. That team reminds me of my community, of where I belong. So there's a belonging and a sense of community within my club. That's one fan. But for the other fan, I fell in love with football because of Ronaldinho, because of Zola, because of Neymar, because of Ronaldo Nazario, because of Rivaldo, because of Romario. Because of Messi, because of Maradona. So there was that player that, wow, look at how good that player is. So when you look at Messi and Zidane, those were guys who were given the keys to be like, bro, go and cook. You're responsible. Rijkaard didn't say anything to Ronaldinho. Rijkaard was like, okay, what's it called? Deco, I needed to do this. Clevers, I needed to do this. Belletti, I needed to do this. Marcus, I needed to do this. Ronaldinho, do your thing. Do your thing. Mm. But now, every player is given a whole bunch of instructions. Every player just fed, like, they just fed so much data. So much instructions, like, hey, be here, position, this time, boom, 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 boom. But there isn't that thing of, like, you, I know you're smart enough, intelligent enough that interpret the game and let the game come to you. Feel the game. Go through it and be like, because I trust that you know what to do. That's, so what Zidane and Messi were saying was like, that number 10 jersey was that thing of responsibility of, I know that you will know what to do in this particular situations. As a manager, I can't tell you. I'll give you the general blueprint. This is a general idea of what we want to do. So I'm giving you broad strokes. But the intricacies of the game, it's down to you. And you have to make that. I can't make that decision for you. You just have to make that decision of, this is when to play the pass. This is when to do the dribble. This is when to now carry the ball even more. This is when to now do the 1-2. This is when to now make that run. This is when to now do that 1-2. That is something that number 10 just knows and understands. But now, the manager's is telling you exactly what to do at every moment in time. So every moment in time, when that guy has the ball, he has all this stuff that has been flooded into his brain for like most of the week. So.
What did you make that in that interview, they never mentioned Pelé? I found that interesting. I was waiting for the number 10 and Pelé, but really it was Maradona, who naturally would be the focal point of their combo. Based on Messi and Argentina, but
you have to remember the age thing, though.
Well, true, but like if they're going into like the history of it, I would think maybe at least Zidane would have some maybe
no
thought to mention him, but maybe not. Maybe I'm being
no. But then think about it. Zidane isn't that far removed from Maradona. So once Zidane was coming in, Maradona was just coming out. So Zidane would have been, probably Zidane's early games would have been when, because Maradona like teetered us around the mid-90s.
I'm not saying that they should have had some reference for his playing career. He peaked in 1970. I don't think Zidane was born until maybe 70-something. So like he wasn't even born during like the heyday of Pelé. But when you're discussing the number 10, that is the most iconic number 10 shirt. Is the Brazil Pelé one. But maybe that's just from my context. And if you're Messi, of course it's gonna be the one with baby blue and white stripes. Like that's obviously gonna be his most iconic. Yeah. Now, did Platini wear 10 for France?
I'm not sure actually.
I think he might have. I'm not sure, but I thought maybe he did. I think he certainly wore it for Juventus. That wasn't mentioned, but it's just interesting people's different frame of reference. Like he mentioned somebody who played for Marseille, whose name is slipping my mind. That is probably very bad for me to slip my mind, but that was his idol. So it's just different frames of reference. So like if I ask you, who's the number 10 for you? Like your number 10, your favorite number 10, who would you say?
Probably Okocha. Yeah, I'll probably say Okocha. You know, like that's probably the one that is the most personal to me because again, like I think everyone represented something different. Because even when you just look at both of them, Zidane and Messi, the way I view them is different. You know, like my brother said something very like, that's pretty cool. He said like, I've never seen a guy control a game the way that Zidane did. So Messi's number 10 and what he does is a different from what Zidane did. Because for Messi, it's about, he's going to score that goal. He's going to take the ball, make that pass, and he's going to start engineering things, but much more in an attacking sense. For Zidane, the game is dictated by him. So he is, and there's, because I always say this, like, look, you had to be there. I've never seen a player beat a team before in my life. Never. Like, what Zidane did to Brazil in 06, I've never seen in my life before. Like, I've never seen that. Like, because the reason why you have to be there is because you have to look at the context. You have to look at who Dinho was, who Kaká was, who Ronaldo was, who Robinho was. And the fact that he literally snatched, like, basically, it's like a basketball guys will know this. He snatched the soul right out of Brazil in a way that I never saw before. So the way he did with number 10 was on a much more psychological level, because, like, and people will attack me. I know people will attack me on this podcast, and this is a world that we'll ever have. For me, let me be clear here. For me, I prefer Zidane over Messi. Messi has a better career. He has a better legacy. He's more talented. He's won more trophies. He's more consistent, 100%. But what Zidane as a footballer and what he did, I'm like, was different. So how they interpreted the number 10 and how they played the number 10 was different. Similar to Pele. The way Pele was as a number 10 wasn't like Maradona, wasn't like Zidane or Messi. You know, like, but then, and here's the key thing for Pele. The reason why the number 10 jersey is a big deal is because of Pele. So even if he wasn't the kind of creative playmaking number 10 that Zidane or Messi was, that thing of, oh, the number 10 jersey is a big deal came from Pele. He started it all. He was the originator of, like, whoever was in that number 10 jersey, oh, you're the guy. This is, you control the team. So.
I'm not enough of a football historian to challenge the point. I do wonder if there were other number 10s in the past that were like, this is why, like, why was that the number that Pele wore? Was it because in Brazil, that's who we give the, that's the shirt number we give the player with the juice? Or did he just stumble upon having that number while having the juice? I don't know. My number 10, by the way, is unquestionably Ronaldinho. That's like, if you think of culture, I think Ronaldinho. He had his own interpretation of what the 10 is. That's like the modern version, I think.
I just typed in why did Pele wear number 10? So this is what Wikipedia says. It was in the 1958 World Cup that Pele began wearing a jersey with the number 10. The event was a result of disorganization. The leaders of the Brazilian Federation did not allocate the shirt numbers of players, and it was up to FIFA to choose the number 10 shirts for Pele, who was a substitute on the occasion. So there you go.
So they just, he was the player with the juice who just so happened to stumble into the 10.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're right. So it was, he made it.
Yeah, iconic. Yeah, it was an accident. Yes, yeah, so. The reason. Yeah. And then, and thus it now became, so really, so yeah, Pele birthed the number 10 being a big deal.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
Because I always wonder, like, maybe there was some player before who had the 10 and Pele wore that. But I guess back in the day, the way they did numbers, there were no set numbers.
No, no.
So anybody could wear a particular number on any day. So, either way. So, like, yeah, like, he just so happened to have the juice and that number.
And that was about,
it made the number stick. There was another point I had about that interview, but maybe we can come back to it at another point in time. You mentioned Endrick, who was called up into the Brazil team at 16 or 17.
17.
Not everything has to go back to Neymar, but I wonder what this Brazil team will look like with Endrick, Rodrigo, Vinicius, if indeed that front three comes to fruition. Certainly, it's better than, like, Richarlison being in there or whomever.
Jesus.
I mean, I guess it kind of goes to that point, though. Like, who is the number 10? Like, who has the juice? Because all of those players are... Now, I don't know enough about Endrick, to be fair, but I feel like he's more like a striker type. There is no... I don't know. Just you know, you make up words. Like, you know, Cellini or whatever these different words
are.
Like,
yeah.
who is the number 10 for Brazil? Like, who is the player that this is our guy? Because I don't know if I necessarily see Vinicius that way. I think he can be a match winner. Mm. But in terms of that player that dictates the course of 90 minutes through either dribbling, creative, vision, whatever it is.
There's no one yet.
I don't see them.
There's no one yet.
In this Brazil team.
There isn't one yet. There isn't one. Like, even watching Endrick's highlights, he isn't the kind of... But here's the thing, though. You have to remember, if you look at 94 to 98, Brazil didn't really have a playmaker. Like, when you look at from 94 to 98, so, okay, 94, that was really Romario. That was Romario's team. So, Dunga and all the guys, they were just there to be functional, but it was about Romario. And this is where he should be Brazil. Ahead of that World Cup in Qatar, who is the Pele? Who is the Socrates? Who is the Romario? Who is the Ronaldo? Who is it? It's because Shai Hazal can be Ray Charleston. So my thing, though, is Brazil have never had a playmaker or relied on a playmaker. They've always had like a functional team with good supporting cast, but that superstar striker. You know, whether it be Pele, whether it be Romario, or it be Ronaldo. So the issue that we had for Neymar's era was Neymar, but who was the superstar striker? Because you put Neymar with Romario, Neymar with R9, oh, Brazil doing something. Even put Neymar with Luis Fabiano, they do something. The issue is that it's bloody Richie Rich, you know? So, and we have a situation right now where at 17 years old, Endrick is a starter for that team. Because Vini for Real Madrid ain't Vini for Brazil. He just ain't. What has Rodrigo really done for Brazil? Anthony is a fake Brazilian who forged his passport. So,
oh man,
you know, like, you know, Endrick, yo, you're probably a starter.
Yo, just quick. I think you need, and I know you're doing the webmaster thing, so maybe it's too late. You need to create a tab that's like the Brazilian embassy. And each Brazilian player gets accepted or rejected or under review for their passport. So you need a tab specifically for Brazil. That's an embassy of Brazil. And like, so Richarlison would be there rejected. Anthony would be there rejected. And then people can then earn back their Brazilian.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
And then no, but you can justify it by saying like, look, my grandmother or great grandmother is from Brazil, so I'm included. Like,
yeah, I might.
I'm just saying because people seem to he's not Brazilian, he's a fake Brazilian. I'm like,
he's not. He's not. No, Anthony's not Brazilian. He's not. I can't accept him.
On the hut, but anyway, yeah. I'm sorry to cut you, but
no. But yeah, look, I mean, look, Brazil are just going through a difficult time, like. I still cannot believe in 2023, Brazil could not beat Croatia in 90 minutes. I refuse to believe that. And we're living in a world where, I told you, like, Germany pimp slapped them in their house.
Oh, wow.
And I think ever since they got pimp slapped in their own house, they've never recovered. I'm of the mindset that Brazil needs to destroy Germany at a World Cup for them to get over what happened in 2014. I think that needs to happen. So until they get there, get back, psychologically, Brazil will be reeling, you know? So
2012 Olympics. No, was it? 2016 Olympics.
Stop it. Don't do that.
You mentioned Mines earlier, so I wrote that one down. You know what's going on with Anwar El Ghazi, I think?
I've heard about this. Yeah.
He was playing either, where was he playing? Burnley or one of the teams that had Clara and Blue. I'm going to have to look this up.
Mm.
Maybe it was Villa. I'm going to look him up. Anwar El Ghazi. Yes, he is playing for Mines now. And he's played for Ajax, Leo, Aston Villa, and PSV. He's from the Netherlands, but he has Moroccan heritage. Oh, and it says he was considering a switch to the Moroccan national team. That's interesting. Even though he has two caps for the Dutch senior team. He came out with a statement at the beginning of the latest round of Israeli bombings in Gaza, after Hamas launched an attack, I suppose. And his contract with Mines was terminated over the post. And recently, I think he said that he's going to court over his termination. So I feel like that's worth mentioning. If only because a lot of footballers, I can't even say I guess. There are footballers who had these statements. I'm thinking of Zinchenko when like the Ukrainian conflict started popping off. And he even went on an interview with Piers Morgan and says, I'm not into politics. I don't know anything political, but then gives political statements. And then people contrasted that with maybe Ozil's statements about Muslims in different countries and how come Arsenal had a problem with this. And Zinchenko can say that. Then we have players who were saying, you know, we stand with Israel and all these different things. But then when a pro-Palestinian stance is elocuted, this player has been sanctioned, punished, sacked even. So, yeah, I find it incredibly interesting which free speech people seem is okay and which isn't. I think it's just a situation that's worth monitoring. He said, oh no, go for it if you have anything to add.
No, I mean, like, again, to quote Ice from the Joe Budden podcast, which I think is an amazing statement, everybody's a hypocrite. Everyone is a... Human beings are the most inconsistent creatures you can think of. So everybody changes the rules to suit their narrative. It's as simple as that. So this whole thing of keep the same energy, it's something that human beings just can't do. We don't keep the same energy. We are hypocrites. So what happens is, no, if I like something or someone, I will change the rules to support that one person, even though I made a blanket statement of X. So, and that's just what it's. People are saying, no, we're going to support this. So anything against this, we're going to go against you. Simple as that. And if another thing arises and someone says something to people like, well, you know, we can't really say anything. It's free speech. So it is free speech until it messes with something that you are in support of. Simple as that.
You know, I'll just read the BBC thing right quick. It says the 28-year-old was suspended on the 17th of October by Bundesliga club after a now deleted post on social media, which was perceived to be pro-Palestinian. Mine said his deal was terminated with immediate effect on Friday, despite lifting his suspension on Monday. Quote, stand for what is right, even if it means standing alone, end quote, El Ghazi said. In social media posts following the termination of his contract on Friday, El Ghazi added, the loss of my livelihood is nothing when compared to the hell being unleashed on the innocent and vulnerable in Gaza. Hashtag stop the killing. Mine said in a statement, FSV Mines 05 is ending the contractual relationship with Anwar El Ghazi and terminated the player with immediate effect on Friday. The club is taking this measure in response to the player's statements and posts on social media. They continued given his commitment to upholding the club's values and the remorse shown and keeping with the club's culture of using mistakes as an opportunity to learn. Oh, this is when they lifted the suspension on Monday, and this is what they said. Anwar El Ghazi will return to training and match-related activities with Mines soon. But then they suspended him. or sacked him, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Mines said El Ghazi's post took a position on the conflict in the Middle East and in a manner that wasn't tolerable for the club.
I mean what are you going to say?
Free speech ain't free is what I've always been told.
Like,
you can say whatever you like, but that doesn't mean there won't be a consequence for what you say. Now, my only hesitation here is that I agree with him in his post and in his stance against the Israeli occupation of Gaza.
Mm.
But I do understand that there are consequences that come with that position, depending on who you work for, why you work there, who is in charge of where you work.
Yeah, yeah.
They might not even necessarily be Israeli or Jewish, but they might have their own political stance that they need to maintain, where being pro-Palestinian is not advantageous for that position. So then you have to fall. So, but I will say, I think history will absolve El-Ghazi in this one. And sometimes being wrong in the moment doesn't mean you're wrong over time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And because you're not ultimately wrong, like that, ultimately, you're just wrong for them. And history will have their opinion of that decision. So, if you're going to be sacked, there are worse things to be sacked for than saying, you know, Israel should stop bombing those in Palestine. Last thing that's on my list, and then we can get out of here. You went to the bridge. We didn't talk last week.
Oh, yeah, we did talk about it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, on the bridge. Field trip review. How was Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's been a while. It was cool. I mean, what I'll say, though, is two things annoyed me. The first thing that annoyed me was, so there was this family. So I think more than these two kids. These kids weren't even watching the damn game. They were just playing amongst themselves. And I was like, wait, what is... You're not watching the damn game, but I get it. Look, it's a... But I'm like, that just annoyed me. And another one was, there was this couple. And these guys, I swear, with all due disrespect, I think they probably found this couple like in a gutter. Like probably the stankest gutter you can think of.
They stunk?
No, their attitude.
Oh.
I mean, the F-bombs, middle fingers... And this lady was like, I mean, my God in heaven. I mean, do you have anything ladylike about yourself?
She was swearing at the players or just in general?
No. She was swearing at the Blackburn players and everything. Like, yeah, F you, blah, blah. Like, sticking her middle finger, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, so I was like, ah, so this is why I don't like going to matches. I was like, oh, yeah, now I remember, because I'm like, This isn't fun. It's not enjoyable. See, when I go and watch Nigeria play, I'm like, it's all football. Everybody's watching the game. Everybody is insulting them in the kind of funny, amicable Nigeria that they insult them with. Everybody is singing songs. And it's just so much more fun. But being here, I'm like, bro, like, everyone else was, it was just those just two isolated incidents. But apart from that, look, man, it was cool to be back at the bridge, man. But one thing that I remember, so it just shows you that it's an old stadium.
Oh wow!
Yeah, because you can feel like it needs rid of. Bro, the seats were on like pieces of bloody plastic, man. Like it's an old stadium. Like it needs that's, you know, the thing they said, like, the... Because where I really want to go is the Tottenham Stadium. Because they said, like, that is, like, the most modern stadium in the world. Mm. Yeah, the most modern football stadium in the world is the Tottenham Stadium, where, like, this is, like, state-of-the-art, like, new. And I think, because I went to Emirates, like, years ago. And that's, like, yeah, that's okay. Yeah, like, this is a modern stadium. But look, yeah, it's just a bridge, man. It's a bridge. But it was cool. Like, another thing as well... And it's weird because it's sort of the same thing. Watching a match real feels different. It just feels different. I don't know why, because I'm like, it's the same thing. TV, really, the same thing. But there's just something about just seeing that player for real a few years away controlling the ball. I'm like, because just even seeing Cole Palmer or Reece James, I'm like, yeah, these guys are good at football. But,
you know what you can do when you're at the game is, if you want to, you can watch one player for as long as you want.
Yes. Because you're there. Yeah.
But
yeah,
when it's television, because of the camera angles, it's kind of hard to follow a particular player in real time. Like, you can sometimes do it depending on the angles, but if when you're in the stadium, you can just track a player. Oh, this is the movement. This is what he does on the ball, off the ball. This is the movement that he's making or trying to make.
But it's easier to
follow, probably.
But also as well, I think... You appreciate just how good the ball control and first touch is for players when you watch it real. Like, we just watch Cirilla and you just see how well they are at controlling the body. Like, yeah, like, this is that level, you know? Because you just don't really see it on TV. But when you're seeing Cirilla, you're like, yeah, Rhys James, that guy's good, bro.
Even the Blackburn players were impressive.
Yeah, no, even them as well. Just, there were times when they would just switch the ball and the guy would just control it. Like, just watching that, for real, you're like, yeah, okay, these are professionals. You know, I am an amateur, wretched, you know, unfit, useless guy. These are professional football players, you know.
That's
so
where they make the big bucks.
Yeah, man, yeah.
That's where they make the big bucks. No, I think, isn't it the League Cup is the one where, like, there's less season ticket holder space? So, like, it opens it up to the public a bit more? I think, isn't okay. that the tournament that they do that?
Maybe I'll tell you off air. Yeah, so just in case, I'll tell you off.
All right, so yeah, this has been the Talking Tactics podcast. We thank you guys for listening. Remember, next week there's going to be a Chelsea special, so you guys stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
If you can share it in your socials whenever it comes out,
yes, sir, do that.
And hopefully, within the next few weeks, you will hear from us on the regular pod. Maybe we'll work something out. Maybe we won't. We'll keep you updated on Twitter. And yeah, wish me good luck. So
this
has been the Talking Tactics podcast. All the links are in the description. Sometimes funny, sometimes serious.
Always football.
Indeed. See you guys when we see you. Peace.
Peace. Sports Social Podcast Network.